Because you have to select, I guess, things for the album, which work just as, in other words, the album is not just like a souvenir of having seen the movie. You want the comedy to work as an audio experience alone.
Well, I think with the Holy Grail album, we actually wrote it for the record. So we used some bits of the film that would work orally and wrote a whole lot of new stuff. But this film, this one is just stuff from the film.
There are some new bits, as people are hearing at this very moment.
Brian is on the run from the Romans and to avoid capture pretends to be a lobster.
No, I'm sorry, that's my handwriting. It should be Preacher.
Oh, that's right. Preacher.
Actually, I quite like lobster.
Brian is on the run from the Romans, and to avoid lobster, captures...
No, there's no lobster. Instead of lobster... There. Yes, no, that's my handwriting. That's teacher, you see, that's a T.
Oh, under the lobster.
Just one more, I think.
Brian is on the run from the lobster, and to avoid capture...
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to stop you there.
Again?
He's actually on the run from the Romans, you see. That's clearly not lobster.
No, I agree.
I grant you that looks a bit like lobster.
That one did, didn't it?
One more time, please. And off you.
Brian is on the run from the can we go?
Yes.
Brian is on the run from the Romans and to avoid capture pretends to lob.
We'll just cut this whole link.
Lobster's getting rather intrusive, isn't it?
We'll cut this. This will be an edit.
Oh, yeah.
I never heard that bit. What's that bit doing? I think you should have told us that bit in.
That was done while you were on holiday.
Oh, I see.
And that's this bit that was done while I was on holiday. Yep. This was when Graham had come back from holiday and he and Eric got together and had a few, didn't you?
A
few of them.
Yeah. And you just ad-libbed it, didn't you?
Absolutely. Weeks of writing.
Spontaneous.
Went into that.
Do you mean to say, Graham, that there are some bits on the soundtrack album of Monty Python's Life of Brian that are not actually in the movie?
Only very brief bits that hopefully explain some of the visual sequences that are missing. One or two extremely silly bits of self-indulgence.
Convinced by a lobster that Brian is the Messiah, a large crowd pursues him outside the city, where, in the hall of a lone hermit...
Oh.
What?
I missed a bit out there. I think it should have been...
No, to the hole of a
lone hermit, shouldn't it?
I think that's fine, isn't it, Andre?
Hey! Take that!
One of the unique things about Life of Brian is that one of the executive producers of the film is a man who was once one of the Beatles. I think that's a first. One of the Beatles produced a major motion picture, namely George Harrison. Mm. How did that come about?
Well, Dave, it came about like this.
We were all looking at each other. Michael, would you like to?
Yeah, I'll answer that as best I can.
You answer it,
Michael.
As far as
I know, I think Eric
met
George
when
he was over in Los Angeles.
Michael is telling you about it now.
Work for the... Graham, please.
I'm sorry, I don't know why I said that.
Doing some carpentry for the Holy Grail. Oh, now look, you've got me. Doing some work for the Holy Grail.
Is Eric a good carpenter?
That's why I was over there, really, to get a bit of expertise. It's
mainly toothbrush racks and things like that, and teapot stands.
He's done a shelf for me.
Oh, he knocked up a few swing doors for our place, actually.
Broke only last week. Put a book on it.
Anyway, Eric was in... Michael?
Just
Eric
for
was
light
in,
things.
If we could get back
paper.
To this. Eric was in Los Angeles.
Eric was in carpentry, doing Los Angeles for the Holy Grail, when it was premiered there.
Can I interrupt here, please?
Certainly. Terry Jones.
Thank you.
Okay. Oh, that's it.
He met George, and they hit it off. Whatever it was.
Toothbrush rack.
In carpentry, one has to do that.
What was it on,
though?
Like?
It was hit off. Well, it was coming
on a small
end.
Coffee table. Yeah.
It was on the
Derek
and they just hit it off.
They both hit it off
hit
together.
It off. They both hit it off and struck up some sort of bond, as one does after one's hit it off with someone,
Eric was given the awful task of going out to Los Angeles and meeting all these awful people to promote the Holy Grail because Michael was too busy on his holidays in Greece getting a tan. So it was Gilliam, actually, Terry Gilliam and Eric Idle. And we hit it off. We went down there and we went to see the show, being silly English people, and there was nothing much happening down at A&M at the time. So we went down, took Jim Keltner and Jesse Ed Davis and went and had a smoke in the projection room. Later, Eric looked so terrified, we thought we'd better go and sit with him. And we haven't looked back. We became pals and buddies, and Michael will tell you all about it.
Anyway, they became pals and buddies, and when we had had a setback in England, the EMI, who were going to back the film, rejected it on the grounds of taste. We were at a bit of a loss, and George heard.
Do you want to do some carpentry for us?
George heard that there was a film around by the Pythons and thought, well, this would be a good way. Because he couldn't, if he lost money, it would be fine. Because it would help his tax out. If he made money, it would be fine.
I think we better edit the bit out about the taxes, please, Michael.
He really enjoyed the Python shows, and he really just wanted to be involved in any way. So it was sort of saved us, really.
Are you suggesting that George Harrison has less taste than EMI?
No, he's got a different sort of taste. Oh, I won't go on about that.
Knock it off again.
That kind of flavour. He has any taste.
No, we owe George a lot, actually.
We do.
And we hope the film's going to pay it back.
You owe him sod all.
Well, it was nice because George and Dennis O'Brien, who was George's manager, came in and really picked the film up very soon after EMI had dropped it. And we were all ready to go with EMI. We even sort of booked our rooms
in
Tunisia.
In fact, hadn't we?
Graham had the carpenters in.
Over in Tunisia, and they'd already started. Eric was over there doing a bit.
And we had to move very quickly because I remember a great thing about Tunisia was, of course, you couldn't film at certain times of year because it was either very hot or very wet. And there was certain, all the weather was terribly important about when we could go without getting stuck in the mud. And we just had to go before September. And if George hadn't come in quite so fast, the film might not have been made till 19.
Hmm. Or else we'd have been doing it in Surbiton and the golf links.
Yeah. As it is, the weather was very bad. You're probably going to ask us about the weather out there.
No, I wasn't planning.
There were some days.
The weather's very nice here in New York.
No, he wasn't going to ask us.
I wasn't going to ask about the weather.
Dave knows about radio, and he knows what's boring and what's not.
I think you answered quite about well, really.
No, what I would like to ask you, though, is about someone told me that much of the set used in Life of Brian was the actual set of another, the Life of
Biblical Days.
The Life of Zephyr.
It was used in Biblical Days? Yeah. Oh, the Life of... Well, it was from another film, another epic biblical movie. Right?
We got out of the monastery, we find, hello, Dave, huge bits of another biblical film around. Cardboard castles, synagogues, temples, all left around by this what's done a film already. So we think, you know, what do you do about that? We take them all down, we can't get our catering vans in. Boats have got a light, you know, all this synagogue in the way, so we use it.
We're
mainly for workshops, you know.
Mm-hmm. How much, quick? What? It's for the wife.
Oh, 20 shekels.
Right.
What?
There you are.
Wait a minute. What? Well, we're supposed to haggle.
No, I've got to get...
What do you mean, no?
I haven't got time.
Well, give it back then.
No, I just paid you.
What? Yeah. This bloke won't haggle.
Won't haggle?
All right.
Do we have to?
Now, look, I want 20 for that.
I just gave you
20. Now, are you telling me that's not worth 20 shekels?
No.
Look at it. Feel the quality. That's none of your goat.
All right, I'll give you 19 then.
No. Come on, do it properly.
What?
Haggle properly. This isn't worth 19.
You just said it was worth 20.
Oh, dear. Come on, haggle.
All right, I'll give you 10.
That's more like it. 10? Are you trying to insult me? Me with a poor dying grandmother? 10?
All right, I'll give you 11.
Now you're getting it. 11? Did I hear you right? 11? This cost me 12. You want to ruin me?
17?
No. 17.
18?
No, you get a 14 now.
All right, I'll give you 14.
14? Are you joking? That's what you told me to say.
Oh, dear.
Oh, tell me what to say, please. Offer me 14.
I'll give you 14.
He's offering me 14 for this.
15?
17. My last word. I won't take a penny less or strike me dead.
16.
Done. Nice to do business with you.
Take 493.
Take one. Now the executive producer of Monty Python's Life of Brian, Mr. George Harris.
Thank you.
Good evening, everybody.
Say what you want, please.
This is one of the executive producers of Monty Python's Life of Brian speaking.
Okay, good.
I used to be...
keep it natural, good.
Natural.
Yeah, just keep it natural as far as possible.
But now I'm just an executive producer, and...
That's really good.
That's really all I have to... do with this thing.
It's
I don't really know anything about
really
it. I never read the script or anything like that. Certainly never went to see the film, and I hear it's absolutely shocking, you know, all kinds of things which shouldn't really be shown to people. But nevertheless, it's one of those unfortunate things one gets into.
Terrific,
in life,
that's fine.
You know?
Thank you very much. That's wonderful. That's just what we needed. Thank you so much.
Can I go now?
Dog's tongues, wren's livers, chaffinch brains, jaguar's earlobes, wolf nipple chips, get them while they're hot, they're lovely, dromedary pretzels, only half a dinar, Tuscany fried bat.
I do feel, Reg, that any anti-imperialist group like ours must reflect such a divergence of interests within his power base.
Agreed. Francis? Yeah, I think Judith's point of view is very valid, Rich. Provided the movement never forgets that it is the inalienable right of every man...
Or woman.
...to rid himself...
Or herself.
Agreed. Thank you, Baba.
Or sister.
Where was I?
I think you finished.
Oh, right. Furthermore, it is the birthright of every man...
Or woman...
Why don't you shut up about women, Stan? You're putting us off.
Women have a perfect right to play a part in our movement, Reg.
Why are you always on about women, Stan?
I want to be one.
What?
I want to be a woman. From now on, I want you all to call me Loretta.
What?
It's my right as a man.
But why do you want to be Loretta, Stan?
I want to have babies.
You want to have babies?
It's every man's right to have babies if he wants them.
But you can't have babies!
Don't you oppress me.
I'm not oppressing you, Stan. You haven't got a womb. Where's the fetus going to gestate? You're going to keep it in a box?
Here, I've got an idea. Suppose you agree that he can't actually have babies, not having a womb, which is nobody's fault, not even the Romans, but that he can have the right to have babies.
Good idea, Judith. We shall fight the oppressors for your right to have babies, brother. Sister, sorry.
What's the point?
What?
What's the point of fighting for his right to have babies when he can't have babies?
It is symbolic of our struggle against oppression.
Symbolic of his struggle against reality.
George, I'd like to ask you something kind of to share a story with us that you once told me, because it's really terrific, I think. The fact that you're one of the producers and working with the Pythons now, that you've been a fan of the Pythons for years and years, and when there was some talk a few years ago that the Pythons weren't going to be doing television in Britain anymore, and people thought they were going to break up, you told...
I nearly cried, David, nearly cried. Oh, it was the worst day of my life when I heard Monty Python may break up. I mean, coming from a group that did break up, I know how rotten it is to break up in life.
So make it easy on yourself.
You know what I mean? It's...
Because breaking up's so very hard to do.
You ought to write
a
song.
At your dealer now. No, truly. It's, as a fan, I would, you know, like them not to break up, really. Although when they're broken up, they're quite cute too.
Well, they break us all the time.
They do.
Crucifixion?
Yes.
Good. Out of the door, line on the left, one cross each. Next. Crucifixion?
No, freedom.
Huh? What?
Freedom for me. They said I hadn't done anything so I could go free and live on an island somewhere.
Oh. Oh, well, that's jolly good. Well, off you go then.
Nah, man, you're pulling your leg. It's crucifixion, really.
Oh, I see. Very good.
Well, out of the door.
Yeah, another way. Out the door. One cross each. Line on the left. Line on the left. Yes, thank you.
How far does your friendship with Eric Idle go back?
Not far at all.
About three blocks?
Yeah, that's about it. Well, you know, he's one of them people who you see so often on television that when you first meet them, you think you've known them all your life. And that's what happened to me with Eric. I thought, I know you. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, say no more. And that was it, really. We've both been around, you know. I mean, I lived in Esher for years, even before Python ever heard of the place.
Where's Esher?
Esher is, it's near Purley.
Speaking as a really. Python, when did you first hear of the place?
What, Purley?
Yes.
Why, Purley, I have relatives from Purley. Have you heard of the Purley Gates?
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Well, that's Purley, down the Purley Way.
Who'd have thought back in 1961 when we all worked for Dick James that we'd be sitting here tonight making a promo album for Monty Python?
Did you once work for Dick James, Eric?
Sid James,
yes. Were you on the set of Life of Brian in Tunisia, George?
Oh. Oh, sorry. I didn't quite...
I think he was there right now, just when I was asking
I
was the question.
There.
He was on the set.
I saw him there.
Was he
there?
Yeah,
I saw him.
Yeah, we flew.
He was there.
We flew there.
Oh, he came in.
We went there. Yeah, we went there. We saw it, and we went back
from,
and got home, and that was it.
Came in for the night.
Went there.
Two musicians had to put bread in their ears because of the way they were playing.
Right. Yeah. True.
Brian. The babe they called Brian. He grew, grew and grew, grew up to be, grew up to be a boy called Brian. A boy called Brian. He had arms and legs and hands and feet. This boy, whose name was Brian, and he dropped down low, and things started to grow on young Brian and show. He was suddenly no girl named Brian, not a girl named Brian. And he started to shave one off the wrist and want to see girls and go out and get paid. A man called Brian, this man called Brian, the man they call Brian, this man called Brian.
No, there were a lot of some of Zeffirelli's sets were left there in Monastir. We did use them, not to a great extent. I mean, there's this fort which was built about 800 AD,
which wasn't one of his. Very ancient.
That was before they had camera. You know, they just had to let it rot because no one had invented the camera. No one invented extras, clapperboards.
These old forts and things for these films.
Well, anyway, it was a lovely fort. And he dressed that.
So, excuse me, Mick. Graham, would you like to interrupt Mike for a minute?
Graham's very quiet tonight.
No, I don't really feel like it.
Before, and then that had taken his lot down, so we then dressed on top of that. I mean, a lot of work was done. We actually built quite a lot ourselves.
Well, I didn't see Michael out there with a hammer very often.
I can't do that. It's like a union, can I? I mean, the hammer. I can't go out and do carpentry.
But Eric can.
And the carpenter's there.
Oh, yeah. He's a carpenter.
Eric. But he hit it off.
There's a wonderful moment in the movie.
Yes,
you know the one that I mean. Now we can go on to something else. There's another moment in the movie that Terry Gilliam created. And I mean the moment in the movie where Brian is rescued. We'll just say the rescue scene, because we don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't yet seen the film.
You mean somebody hasn't seen it?
And there are many cities in the U.S. where it's not yet playing. It'll be coming to your town soon if it's not already there, if the churches and synagogues of your town permit it to come there, I assume.
Well, I think they will, yes.
You don't think they would actually stop the film? Anyway, about this rescue scene, when the film is being planned, is it just Terry Gilliam who does all of the animation for the pythons? Mm-hmm. Is he just said, okay, Terry, and at this point, create some bit of madness for us, and he just goes off into his laboratory and...
That's how it always worked with the TV shows, in fact.
Yes.
With this film, it didn't really, because Terry came in on the writing of the... You know, and discussing the actual storyline, and we seemed to have got through the story, and we didn't seem to have any room for any animation. It looked like we couldn't have. There was no place to get any animation, and so almost this escape was actually almost engineered to make a moment where we could do something like that.
Uh-huh.
So it was a slightly different sort of from the normal pattern.
I think that we'd written our sketches, and that was his. He wrote this piece, really, about wanting to do a flying saucer bit.
Did he do the titles as well?
Yeah.
All the graphics are Terry Gilliam's work.
Yeah.
And he does do some acting in it as well. Some wonderfully grotesque performances.
Next. Crucifixion?
Yes.
Good. Out of the door, line on the left, one cross each. Jailer?
Excuse me, there's been some sort of mistake.
Just a moment, would you? Jailer, how many have come through?
What?
How many have come through?
What?
You'll have to speak up a bit, sir. He's deaf as dead, deaf as a post, sir. How many have come through?
Oh dear.
I'll make it 96, sir.
No. It's such a senseless waste of human life, isn't it?
No, sir. No, not with these bastards, sir. Crucifixion's too good for them, sir.
I don't think you'd say it's too good for them. It's very nasty.
Oh, it's not. Not as nasty as something I just thought up, sir.
Yeah. Now, crucifixion.
Is there someone I can speak to?
Well, I know where they did it, if you want it.
What?
Don't worry about him, sir. He's deaf and mad, sir.
Well, how did he get the job?
Bloody pilot's pet, sir.
I really want to thank you all for spending this time in the radio talking
It's being very cozy and comfortable, and I think we've all learnt a bit about carpentry talking to you, Dave, in a strange sort of way, wouldn't you say, Graham?
Is that all you're going to say, Graham?
What's about it? Yeah.
Could you give us something a little bit... I mean, after all, you are Brian.
Yeah.
I would feel just personally that it would be nice to end this hour with some words from Brian.
David, he's crying. Please.
Well, I don't know. What can I say, really?
That's smashing, Gray. I think
we just leave it. Write something down for me to say.
Don't pass judgment on other people, or you might get judged yourself.
What?
I said, don't pass judgment on other people, or else you might get judged too.
Oh, me?
Yes.
Oh, thank you very much.
Consider the lilies.
Consider the lilies?
Well, the birds, then.
What birds?
Any birds.
Why?
Well, have they got jobs?
Who?
The birds.
Have the birds got jobs?
What's the matter with him?
Says the birds are scrounging.
Oh, look, the point is, the birds, they do all right, don't they?
Well, good luck to them.
Yeah, they're very pretty. Okay, and you're much more important than they are, right? So what are you worrying about? They are, see?
I'm worrying about what you've got against birds.
I haven't got anything against the birds. Consider the lily.
He's having a go at the flowers now.
Give the flowers a chance. Look, there was this man, and he had two servants.
What were they called?
What?
What were their names?
I don't know. And he gave them some talent.
You don't know?
Well, it doesn't matter.
He doesn't know what they were called.
Oh, they were called Simon and Adrian. Now...
Oh, you said you didn't know.
It really doesn't matter. The point is, there were these two servants.
He's making it up as he goes along.
No, I'm not. And he gave them some... No, wait a minute. Were there three?
Oh,
there
he's three. Terrible.
No, there were three. There were stewards, really.
What can I say, really?
Quite good. That's a smashing day. I think we'll just leave it.
Write something down for me to say.
What's the capital of?
No questions.
Oh, sorry,
don't know something.
Difficult, isn't he? Write down.
It is out of the blue like this.
Yeah. Any ideas for another film? Have you got an idea for the next film?
Yes.
Well.
I
don't think one could talk about it.
Oh, I see.
I did notice the certain look in your eye, like you actually did have an idea for the next film, though, that you did not want to disclose to other filmmakers who might be listening right now, with pencil in hand.
That's true. I mean, this film nearly got written by somebody else, actually. I can't say who it is at this moment. But
no, we can't.
They wrote all but a few words of it. They'd written exactly the same.
Really?
Yes.
Ben-Hur was our idea.
Yeah. So they've stolen right from you?
King of Kings, all those. We can't. I mean, that's why our film was so delayed. They kept start coming out. Glenn Hurt was going to be, but they just changed him. He didn't fool anybody, did he?
What would John have said if he'd been here, I wonder?
He'd probably said, shut up, Graham.
He would at that particular point, yeah. Yes. It's
totally irrelevant. I think it's not
some news about the stock exchange.
What would Eric have said if he had been here?
Cheer up, Brian. You know what they say. Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. Hey.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Come on.
Always look on the bright side of life.
For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath.
Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep them laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
Come on, boy, cheer up.
Always look on the right side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
Where's things happen to see, you know?
Always look on the right side of life.
What are you going to lose? You know, you come from nothing. What you lost?
Always
nothing!
Look on the right side of life.
Nothing will come from nothing, you know what I say?
Always
cheer up, you old bugger. Come on, give us a quiz. There you are. See? The end of the film. Incidentally, this record's available
always
in the foyer.
Always look on the right
side.
Don't
want to live as well, you know. Alright, it's a lot.
This special hour with Monty Python was a Monumental Blunders production, produced by Drea Besh for Warner Brothers Records. This is Dave Herman. Thank you for listening.